And we're back, Stripe Show Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Fulton. Thank you for making us part of your day. Big week in professional golf. The Olympics, a little bit different. Guys are over in Paris, greatest athletes in the world. And they're going after that gold medal. And the guy that got the gold medal 4 years ago just happens to be probably the best player in the world right now. Two major championships, and his coach joins us now, a week off, I'm sure. Well, not a week off, but a week not traveling down in Southern Florida. Chris Como, thanks for joining us, bud.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
Well, congratulations, first off, on all your success. I know, you took Xander on, and obviously he is, really taken off here, two major championships, but you've been doing a lot of good work with Jason Day, and Pearson Cootie was close, getting his first win there just a few weeks back, and Siwoo Kim and Kurt Kitayama, and I don't know how you keep track of all of them, man, but you're doing a hell of a job, and we appreciate you taking the time. Always take the time to come back to the podcast. So we appreciate that.
Yeah, always have fun chatting with you.
So we got a lot to get to, all right? There's some swing concepts I'm going to throw at you. I want to get your thoughts on. There's some short game thoughts that I want to throw at you, get your thoughts on. There is a video from your show, Swing Expedition, that you did with, you've got top teachers on there. You did one with Bill Harmon, one of my old friends from Golf Channel days. And you guys talked about some different swings from the past. So I want to get your thoughts on that. We're going to break that down. So we've got a lot to get to. But we've got to start with right now the best player in the world, Scottie Scheffler. We probably have something to say about that. But you win two major championships, man, in the same year. I mean, you are the dog. Xander has really made a lot of strides. It seems like, from my opinion, it seems like both off the golf course and on the golf course from a technical standpoint. But before we get to the technique, just talk about Xander, the person, since you've met him versus who he is now. Where have you seen the most growth?
I mean, he's the same guy as he is now that when I first met him. I mean, I've known him for quite a while. Mm-hmm. We started working at the end of last year, but I've known him for quite a while, been friendly. We have a mutual friend that we're both really good friends with, Carter Poole. And, he introduced us many, many years ago, gotten friendly with Matt on tour, became friendly with his dad, Stefan, who's always been super great to me. So we've had a good relationship for a while. And then, we started working towards the end of last year. He's the same guy. I mean, he's been a great golfer for a long, long time. He's had an incredible work ethic probably since he was a little kid, which was instilled upon him by his dad. And, he just has kind of upped it a notch, I guess, yeah. And, had some breakthroughs, like gone over the hump. But, like, these things were going to happen regardless. You can't ever really predict the timing of it, and they oftentimes, come lumpy. It's one of those things where things always happen slower than you expect them, and then also faster than you expect them, right? I'm sure in some ways he had hoped he had won a major in years prior, but then all of a sudden, bang, you win two in a row, or two in 1 year. So he's a good dude. He's got an incredible team around him, and he's a lot of fun to work with, as well as a lot of fun to work with his team.
You look at his changes. I've talked about, some of the things that he alluded to, right? He's been fairly vocal about some of the changes that he's made from a technique standpoint with you. I did a podcast on it, a week or two ago. I sent you the link, and I wanted you to give me a grade on the changes as I saw it. You and I text from time to time, but as I saw it and as I was listening to Xander speak about it, and you look at this, and, that's Xander from, two or three years ago on the left. And for those watching on YouTube, you can see the changes here. And for those that are just listening, I'll articulate it. But basically, when you look at a more recent Xander, Chris, the club shaft is pointing with the driver a little bit more down the line, right? Versus, say, at times a little short and maybe a little more so to the left. Now, I always tell people there's a difference between being laid off and being more laid off. There's a difference between being across the line and being more across the line, right? And so as I look at this and set the stage, let's say older Xander, club pointing more left at the top of the driver, newer Xander, club pointing more down the line. Now, I bring this up because, look, from an amateur golfer, I will see a decent amount of players come in here with a shorter swing, and the club will indeed get laid off. And so often I'm trying to lengthen them out and get the club a little bit more complete. Before we get to the amateurs, speak to Xander here in what we're looking at in the club shaft at the top and why some of these changes took place.
Yeah, I mean, the one on the left, I don't know like when that is exactly. But like when we first started working, he definitely, like the club was, I'd say more laid off than that, and with it longer. I mean, typically like kind of short and laid off is not the worst thing, I don't think. But like if someone gets it kind of long and laid off and, you know, whatever else is happening, the wrist conditions, you know, also depends on the shot they want to hit and what their overall kind of release pattern through the ball is, and then how they want to move their body through the ball. But, you know, it can be one of those things where the way you react to it, one, you have your good shot, and then you have kind of what if your, or your misses off that good shot. And then that's even can get broken up into like if you're trying to really step on a one, or if you have trouble in a certain place or wind off a certain, you know, kind of off the left or the right or whatever it is for that individual, you might start to react to certain things in ways that, you know, coming down the stretch in a tournament aren't exactly what you want. So through like our own kind of process of, you know, we played some holes, we studied a bunch of footage of over the years. He talked me through some of the shots, you know, maybe he would hit under pressure or whatever. And, you know, from all that information emerged this sort of rough direction to go in, which was a little bit more across, actually a little bit steeper in the shoulders, and then even try to work the face away from being kind of overly shut, which in general, I don't mind a shut face. I love a shut face oftentimes. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. for him, it was sort of working away from that a little bit, not definitely not getting open in any fashion, but just working away from that a bit. And, you know, then again, it's like you're constantly trying to take in more information as you go along, and updating sort of your approach and your overall model, and then even the way you think about it or the way you feel something as you keep going forward. So yeah, I mean, you know, if I had sent you the footage of when we first worked, you could see the difference. But his shoulders were definitely flatter, even then on this one on the left, and the club was, you know, relative to the length of it, was even more laid off than mm-hmm. this picture. And then from there, he was hitting, you know, every now and then he hit some shots when he was trying to cut it. That would be kind of like a pull sort of hook shot a little bit. And, you know, that was a shot under pressure that, you know, he just really didn't want to see. So.
So with the club, so when he would try to cut it, that would be kind of the miss. Would he get would he tend to get a little steep on it, a little out in front, little, and kind of hit that hard pull to the left, or maybe even a wipe from time to time when that was where the steepness would come in? Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did a bit of a pull. And then if you wanted to hit a draw, he would have to hit a draw in a way that was kind of more of a hang back with his body. So he loves working the ball. He loves working it both ways. So it's just trying to figure out kind of a backswing and then how he would come out of that backswing into transition in a way that he could be pretty aggressive with his body motion and still hit, you know, work it both ways.
The downside, Chris, just speaking in terms, if the club does get laid off at the top, right? Which you're saying that with Xander, it was even more left at the top than what we're looking at. Generally speaking, I know everybody's different, but generally speaking, in particular, when you're trying to cut, it's easy to pull down. It's easy for that club to start working towards vertical. It's easy for that club to start getting heavy, right? Early in transition. And then from there, you have to, you know, accommodate maybe a little more steepness coming down. You know, where if I want to draw it, to your point, I've got to hang back, or I've got to maybe get the handle to come in a little bit higher. You know, an average player who gets the club too laid off, they get steep and they just dive across it, right? They're not going to make the appropriate compensation to the level that Xander's going to make it, right? They're just going to keep turning and lose shaft lean and hit it on the toe and all these things. So generally speaking, Chris, for me, as we transition here a little bit to the amateur, it's, you know, I generally speaking, and I know this is, you can't speak for everybody, but generally speaking, for the masses, give me the more complete turn and the club may be more down the line, maybe slightly across, maybe the club face slightly shut versus give me a little shorter and laid off at the top?
I mean,
for the masses, for the, in, on average, and I know everybody's different, but on average, if you took both those two, right? If you took the 15 to 20 handicap and you said, hey guys, this group, we're a little across, face a little shut. You know, we've got a good turn, good depth. This guy, and then this mass over here, we're a little shorter and we're a little more laid off. You guys go play, figure it out. Which one comes back better? You didn't expect that question, did you?
No, I mean, it's like, I mean, I guess on average, maybe you could say that. I mean, it's just, I mean, but how much, right? But it's like,
right.
Like, I don't, and, little, and how much better, like, you know, it's just, it's kind of one of those questions that, sure. You know, and like all across that line is not equal, even with it, like with the constraints of a cross and say a little bit shut and then all laid off. I mean, I think laid off and open is a pretty tough one. But you know, all laid off, is definitely not equal. It's like, where's it coming from? How does it like, you know, match up to the body rotation? What is their sort of like current way to work into the ball from a release pattern perspective? Are you trying to change that? Are you not trying to change that? I mean, yes, this is where it gets tough. So in a very sort of generic sense, I don't think you'd be, I don't think that's incorrect to say that.
Is it? Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I was going to say, is it fair with Xander? And I'm going to go to face on now with the picture on the right and the changes. Now the club's more down the line. You also said the left wrist is a little more extended. It's not as flexed. Did I hear you say that right? The left wrist?
A little bit. The grip's gotten a little weaker.
Grip's gotten a little weaker. Okay. So the face is not as shut. Mm-hmm. Club more across the line. Is it fair to say that through that, Xander, when you look at here, the picture on the left, Xander makes a more complete turn?
Yeah, at times definitely it turns a little bit more, fuller, a little bit more, well, I mean, it's weird, right? Because the shoulders are a little bit steeper. So in some ways that can kind of make the turn look like less a bit, but, but I would say, you know, it's, there was times when it maybe got a little bit kind of reverse looking and then, cause he creates a fair amount of lean through the ball. So then for him to hit at the height he would want to, there's a little bit of a rocking back every now and then. So, you know, in general, it's been about, the turn has gotten a little bit different going back. I don't know if I would say that it's 100% piggybacked with just the idea of getting more across the line. There's been some kind of nuance to what we've tried to do from a turn perspective. But yeah, I mean, in general, I would say also that when people get more across the line, they oftentimes turn a little bit more to do so. Now you can get it across the line without necessarily turning more.
Sure.
You can turn more and not get it more across the line. So again, this is where, you know, I want to be, you know, very sort of careful with saying that like those two things have to go together. They absolutely don't. But, as a generalization, yeah, I think, you know, usually when people turn more, they usually get more across line. And typically when people try to get it more across line, they oftentimes turn more to do so. So you will see those two things go together, you know, often.
Is the steeper turn, I see him do the thing with his right shoulder where he's kind of peeling it back behind him.
Is
the steeper nature of the shoulders, is that what got it across the line, or is that paired with something else in his wrists, elbows, whatever? Is there something that his feel in addition to the shoulders that gets the club more, you know, there versus laid off?
Yeah, both of those things were worked on somewhat independently in terms of the feel. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like one absolutely got the other one to happen. Yeah, mm-hmm. Wrist motion, just a feeling of the club. I mean, this is where for an individual, you know, sometimes you're trying to like say, okay, this is what the goal is, but then, you know, where do you feel it? Do you feel it in your wrist? Do you feel it just in the shape of the club? Do you feel it like in some sort of like where in the backswing do you feel it? Things like that. Like, you know, to me, there's a difference between, do you feel the cross line happening, you know, early in the backswing? Do you feel like it's happening late in the backswing? And all those things can affect, because now all of a sudden you have a certain momentum of the club going into the later part of the backswing. And then you're essentially trying to like work against that. You're trying to decelerate the momentum. So where is that direction of that momentum coming from? And then that's going to, you know, set up some sort of deceleration against that. And then that can oftentimes have a big influence of the way the club comes out of transition.
It looks like to me this, the impact's been with the driver. I know it's through the bag, but the driver's really been, you know, he's gotten a little bit longer. I see this particular thing, you know, with the direction we're discussing with other players. I see it with Sahith Thagala. I could bring up, I've talked about him a number of times and where that shaft is pointing versus it was, say, a year ago. Spieth is another that, you know, comes to mind. But not, you know, make no mistake, everybody listening, I'm not trying to suggest that everybody should be across the line. We're having a conversation about, you know, the shaft and where Xander was versus where he is now and the reason why he might change that. And there's certainly other examples that would go the other way, right? I mean, Max Holm is one that was a little too tippy, you know, vertical, and he's trying to change his wrist angles and the shaft pointing more left over the last couple of years. We were talking about another one of your players that's just the opposite of this, Kurt Kitayama, who you've helped tremendously, in particularly with his driver, who as I understand, correct if I'm wrong, you've added flexion to his left wrist, and he's more laid off, right, versus what he was.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Like, his backswing, we've been trying to get it more laid off. A lot more bow in his left wrist. So almost the polar opposite, at least in terms of like what we're trying to do with the backswing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, exactly. This is where golf swings are so weird, right? And I'm sure it's so annoying for people listening in because there's so much of the, like, it depends, but it really is. I think, you know, the coaches that I've been around that I really think through like swings or like working with a player at a well that really sort of at least resonate with me, it always comes down to this very sort of like nuanced, it depends on it, you know, on their body, on just all these different tendencies, the shot shape they want to hit, you know, all these different things that you're trying to take into account. And even when you do like a really great job of taking in a lot of things into account, there's still variables that are like unknown to you, to the player, right? That aren't even inside their conscious awareness. So that's where I think, you know, you always got to be on your toes and ready to call an audible and take in new information and constantly be updating as that new information comes in.
Let me throw two just coaching concepts on at you when you're making technical changes. Okay. One is, do you find yourself trying to create an environment of, hey, this is what we're after, and let the student tell you what they feel? Or do you find yourself jumping in and saying, hey, here's kind of what I want to have happen. And, you know, here's maybe some things that you might feel in these particular areas. How do you go about the change itself? Is it a little bit of both? I don't know if I articulated that very well, but I think I heard you say earlier to the tune that you want kind of the student to tell you what they feel that makes the change that you're looking for.
It depends again. Okay. No, I mean, not necessarily, but I mean, both, right? I mean, it is both. And I think first, like, you're trying to make a decision on what is the best direction to go with someone's swing, which is its own thing. Mm-hmm. And if you sort of like don't choose wisely, like, you can kind of hurt someone, especially if they're like, If you're rigid about it, you're like, oh, you gotta do this, even if it's not working for someone. And then if you have sometimes the worst situation can be a player who's like, I'm gonna put it in no matter what, and they got the work ethic, because then even if something isn't quite working out, they're just gonna hammer it in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not necessarily working out, right? So first part is you gotta like overall have like the right direction. But then I think, you know, part of that is being flexible enough to be like, okay, we need to pivot a little bit here or there, whatever it is. Again, as you get more information in, and then it's like, how do you get someone to make the change, which is its own like a mixture of like psychology, a mixture of like almost like cognitive science. Like, how do they take information? How do they perceive everything? So for me, it's like so much trying to get like in their head on how they're taking things in. The way they see things, the way they see the world, the way they see their swing, the way they see ball flights and misses and all these things, you know, if there's a certain miss that a person just like, it just shakes them to the bone, you got to know that, because if you're trying to make a change and it's bringing in that miss some percentage of the time, they're going to fight it just because of that miss. Yeah. So you got to know these types of things. And then, you know, when it comes to the feel stuff, I mean, look, it's like, I want the feedback of how they feel things, you know, but you sometimes got to lead them in a certain direction. Mm-hmm. And then once they're in that direction, then you're kind of like trying to get some feedback. I mean, it's definitely a dance of sorts. Yeah. But I would not say it's one or the other. And every player is different in that regard. There are some players who are way more expressive of their feels and things like that, or maybe better communicators of that. And some people, it's like, they don't quite know. They don't know how to articulate it to another person. So you got to pull that out better, or maybe, you know, whatever it is. But this is where there's the analytical side of, like, say, coaching and swing stuff, where, you know, you're trying to come up with the right game plan. You're taking in the data, whether it be force plates or 3D or whatever it is. But then so much of it is the sort of, again, the psychology / cognitive science part of it. And how do you actually get someone to make a change?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the art of it, right? And I think experience, I would imagine, has helped. You know, the more reps you have and the different kinds of people that you work with. And obviously you work with some masses or some amateurs too, but, you know, you're out there spending a lot of time with these five players that I mentioned and others, these super high skilled players, and how that might be different than, say, a 15 to 20 handicap that comes in the studio and plays golf once every 2 weeks. You know, and practices maybe once a week, maybe, you know, they've got two or three kids, they've got a job. Golf means, you know, it's fun to them, and they want to get a little bit better, but they're not going to put the time in, you know, like, it's just, they're going to a little bit, but they're not going to put the time in like Xander's putting the time in. They're not gonna put the time in that, like, Kirk Kitayama's putting the time in. Like, they're not going to get to that level, but they want to get incrementally a little better, and they want to understand a little bit more about their game and the direction that they need to go. And so I think, at least in my mind, the conversation when you, it seems when you're having with a 15 handicap that comes in here with kids and a wife and a job, and golf is like number 7 on the list. And you start addressing some of these swing issues that maybe, as you do the deep dive, let's say a player like this, you know, John Rahm, who just won last week and is my pick to win the Olympics. Sorry, I mean, I like Xander, but anyway. So you look at that first move, Chris, right? And the hands go out and the clubhead goes in, right? And John Rahm has a very unique swing. Speaking of, you know, flexion and laid off at the top with the face shut and dealing with that, he does it pretty well, and he always has. Although he wasn't that laid off and shut in college. I've got some interesting video to look at that versus where he is. Anyway, first move, hands out, left arms off the chest, hands go out, club head goes in behind the hands. That shows up in my studio 20 handicap. They don't deal with that as well as, say, John Rahm would deal with it, or let's say as Matthew Fitzpatrick would deal with that. When I see that move, Chris, generally just for me, and I want you to react to this, and let's just speak to the amateurs. When I see that move, what I see from there is counter. I see a body fault usually. You know, I'll either see a sway or a little bit of a reverse. The body won't turn as efficient. The arms will go up, and then it's almost inevitable they're going to come over it from there. Not always. The ones that don't and manage it well are the more higher skilled players. And, you know, you certainly have that conversation more so, at least in my opinion, when, you know, if you're going to address it or not. But more times than not, I'm going to fix it because I deem that as a hindrance to the development of that player based off what I see in the rest of the swing. Do you see that, or are you working with enough amateurs that when you see that, you would kind of say, yeah, more times than not, I'm cleaning it up?
So, and kind of going back to what you were saying before, like, I actually feel like one of the most important windows of my career from, like, say, a developmental perspective, I worked for years, you know, whatever, 5 years, 4 or 5 years on a driving range in Dallas, mm-hmm. where I had, like, no reputation to precede me. You know, I had already, like, had worked for Lead for a little bit, and I had done a couple golf schools with Mac O'Grady. So I felt like I had a pretty good education, but I had no, like, I wasn't marketing. I wasn't part of an academy.
Sure.
And, you know, trying to pay your bills purely through word of mouth, you're not at a club where you got like, you know, a captive audience of sorts, an academy where you have a captive audience of sorts, but purely just through word of mouth, to me is this very sort of raw environment where you, out of necessity, right, being the mother of all invention, you have to figure out just in the most practical sense how to make things work.
Got to get results. Yep.
And do that within the constraints that you're given, whether it be a tight body, a busy schedule, a newly born kid, just got a promotion, whatever it is. And then you start to really, really respect the constraints you're given and then come up with what you think is the best game plan to get the results that are realistic given all those constraints. And to me, this is where it's just, you become very practical. And I sort of take what I feel like a lot of like the things I learned in that environment to how I work with tour guys or whoever. And it just happens to be that with a tour guy, oftentimes the constraints are maybe, you know, a little bit, they're different. They're not oftentimes time. They're not a body that's kind of broken, but they could be a shot that they hate seeing. They could be, you know, the risk of getting worse when you're one of the best players in the world. So just, it definitely becomes a little bit of a different, you know, specifics, but in overall the philosophy is very similar. And to me, it's like, you know, like say you go back to ROM and sort of the specifics of this. And, you know, if you say like, hey, look, you know, a guy's got a takeaway that's similar to ROM, but all these other things are different. I mean, to me, it's sort of like, okay, one, I'd have to ask, is it exactly the same? Like, I'd have to see it because I don't know. Maybe like takeaways that are in, again, aren't all equal. It's right. Like, what's the face look like exactly? How did he get the face there per his wrist conditions? You know, per his wrist conditions, what was his grip that sort of set that up? You know, what is the impact that he knows how to get to? How does that work relative to the backswing they're creating? Because now all of a sudden it's like, you know, most golfers who are kind of getting golf lessons, you know, somewhat consistently, they're already good golfers, meaning they're good enough to hit a shot that they're like, oh, that's great. And they're more interested in how, if I could just do that over and over again, you know, I'd be kind of happy. Like if I could hit my best shot over and over again, that'd be pretty good. So they know how to hit a good shot. So they already have that in their brain and they're creating a backswing, you know, consciously or unconsciously, that's helping to set that up. So I'd want to understand what that is. John Rahm has a very particular way he comes into the golf ball. Mm-hmm. So everything else is working its way around that to kind of fit that subconscious end goal, right? So, you know, would I change the takeaway? I don't know. Like, I'd have to see what it is exactly, but maybe not. Like, if, you know, maybe I would change their concept of impact. You know, maybe the reason why they're tilting and doing all this other stuff with their backswing is because what they feel like is their end game is very different than what John Rahm's end game is. And that's why they're reacting into all these sort of different ways. You know, I would say I've changed a ton of backswings in my life through changing a person's intention on the downswing. Mm-hmm. So people tend to think about things as like, oh, you know, set up first, takeaway second, backswing third, transition fourth, impact last. That's not the way a person's brain is working at an unconscious level. They're trying to like figure out this impact that they kind of want to create. Again, this could be all like unconsciously that's happening, and their backswing is just a function of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those things where like oftentimes if a person is like, hey, they come into me and they're like, man, my backswing is this. It's always been like this. I've gotten a ton of lessons and I want it to be, you know, like, you know, this instead, right? Whatever it is instead. And they have a concept of it and it's like, okay, show me what you want. They can do it in slow motion, but then as soon as they hit a golf ball, it's like right back to the old. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you have like the formal like knowledge in a sense. You kind of conceptually know what you want to do, but there's something that's resisting against that. And this could be for any level golfer. Then it's like, well, what is it that your current backswing is serving for you? It's like, it's doing something for you. If you're in your mind, you're saying you don't want it and you're trying not to have it, but you keep going back to it. Sounds like life in some ways, right?
Yeah.
So you keep going back to it. Like, what is it that it's serving you? Right. Yeah. And you got to like figure that out. And then that becomes oftentimes sort of this place that they are like this thing they're doing on the downswing that's, you know, familiar to them or whatever it is. It's like you need to change that first for the backswing to change.
Well, it's interesting because I want to transition here. I want to spend a little time with on the short game at the end here too. And I know we've got time is limited a little bit, but I think with this move, the masses, you know, they don't feel like they've got room to kind of do what they want to do coming down. And that kind of leads me to this, where you were on your show on Golf Channel talking to Billy Harmon, who I used to work a lot with, the old show called On the Range when we were kicking.
Oh yeah.
And
that was a good show.
So here's the opposite of that. I mean, you want to talk about the club head not getting in behind you. I mean, this dude, Kenny Perry, first move is up, right? I mean, look how different that is. So, you know, when we're going to the other end of the extreme now, you know, now all of a sudden the club head, he picks the club head straight up. The club head's out in front of the hands. But as Billy would put it, it's like an old up and in swing. Like it's up and then it's in, you know, it kind of works around him. And so often, Chris, and again, I'm just speaking to the masses here of, you know, of a 5 handicap to a 10 to a 20 or whatever. They suck it inside. They oftentimes don't create a lot of depth, and then they kind of feel like they're going to come over it, where the opposite of that, let's say they work it more up than around. Now they have more depth, and it's easier for them to, you know, bring it more back down a little from the inside, even though Kenny Perry is not exactly like, you know, dropping it way underneath. I mean, but the idea is up, you know, then in, and then now from there, the club, you know, kind of drops back down, let's say a little underneath that coming down. So I find my language, not always, but a lot in developing golfers to improve that probability of impact, whether they're perceiving it or not, but just to see it starting to develop with better impact dynamics in the shaft and the face and the body and all those things. I find myself shifting that pattern a little more towards Kenny Perry than I would Jon Rahm. What do you think of that? Shoot holes through me.
I mean, I don't think it's a hole. I don't think it's a whole thing, but I mean, yeah. It's like, you know, like obviously there's like the Fred Couples of the world. And,
right.
You know, there's, you know, handful of swings that do have like, say, more arm swing and kind of more up in the arms early, and then they complete mm-hmm. the rotation later, and that's going to have that look. And then they react to it the way they do. Then you got, like you said, Jon Rahm, or you got the Nancy Lopez's, or yeah, John Daly, or John whatever, Daly, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, yep.
So
it's fun. I mean, it's an interesting. It's which makes our job so crazy, right? And like, and I'm in for you and working with that super high skilled player and just the nuance of all of that, right? And like you said, being very sensitive to any change versus, you know, a 20 handicap, right? They're paying you good money, but it oftentimes can be a little different direction, right, for them, because they're not, like you said, the challenges are a little different for them versus, say, a tour player.
For sure. I mean, the challenge is definitely a different thing, right? But, I mean, like, look, you obviously have, like, a ton of experience as a teacher and have a really good track record. I bet you're going to find some teacher in the world who also has a lot of experience and a good track record who says, you know, I feel like I tend to get people like a little bit more in and shut with the club going back. Mm-hmm. Cause it helps them have like more body turn early. Like, I don't know. And then what do you say? Right. So, yeah. I mean, to me, it's always like and I think in general, students are becoming so much more educated, right? They can go on YouTube and see what swings
look like.
Oftentimes people have an idea of like, oh yeah, I know kind of what I want my swing to look like. And when they're over a ball from their perspective, they're trying to make it look like Ernie Els, Adam Scott, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, they sometimes they oftentimes think they are looking like it, and then they look at it on video, like, what? How's that? What my swing is? So, to me, I was if there's a pull in a direction, whether it be in or out or whatever it is, it's like, where's that pull coming from? So I always ask myself that question: is like, you know, why are they gravitating? Why are they going in that direction? What's making their backswing shape in that direction?
Mm-hmm.
Because then to me it's becomes sort of more of the unlocking of it. And then it's also, you know, oftentimes, you know, the exact backswing shape, you kind of, you mentioned Jon Rahm earlier. It's like his backswing in college was a little bit different than it is now. He hit it pretty darn good with both of those. And I think if you track the career of a lot of like really good players, their swings aren't exactly the same throughout their career.
No.
So it's not like there's just some spot even for an individual where it's like, it's got to be here. Right. But this is where I find myself oftentimes really working swings backwards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there, I think the backswing shape to facilitate certain things that I want to see happen on the downswing, the backswing shape oftentimes emerges. And I would say that's probably true for me, at least when I'm coaching, even for like high handicappers. So, or any skill level, it is this sort of working it backwards. And, you know, just like I do think there's a lot of different backswings with tour guys that can make a tour guy play really, really well. I think for, you know, the recreational golfer, again, there's a lot of backswings that can help them play better. And it's contextual. It's all, what are they doing on the way down? How do I think what they're doing on the way down can get better to improve whatever it is we're trying to improve? And then from there, you know, potentially as a strategy, you know, from a practical perspective, a backswing that can help that end game goal that we decide we're going for, that's where a backswing becomes a strategy to help that goal. And that kind of emerges through that sort of analysis.
Love it. All right. Last thing. Last thing. Got to get your thoughts on this. Steep versus shallow, right? I mean, unbelievable discussion we're having on, you know, short greenside pitch shots, which is fantastic, right? And I love, even though I may not gravitate a certain way, I think what I've always learned from you and respect you about, you're going to, you know, and I try to do the same thing, is kind of go down that rabbit hole of why, you know, maybe it's being taught that way or the success that they're having that way, right? And learn from that and how you could maybe incorporate that into your teaching, into your Rolodex. And so, you know, Victor, it's been interesting. When you look at this, the above versus the below, you know, one of the big changes Victor made was, you know, he kind of moves his head towards the target, which is not, you know, not exactly revolutionary. It's been around for a while. I mean, Spieth's been doing that, I think, his whole life. But, you know, a little lean left, like the head goes towards the target, and you can see the difference there on the bottom and getting a little, you know, a little steeper, call it, into impact, and that discussion leading into, you know, getting the leading edge a little bit more on the ground. And I think this is another fabulous topic of perhaps where a professional golfer can manage maybe the leading edge a little more so than say that 15-20 handicap that, you know, will get that leading edge on the ground and stuck a couple times, and then forever, you know, they start trying to accommodate and manufacture and flinch and not do that. And then they hit it thin. And, you know, so there's that journey of that. And I've went through it as a player, you know, of leading edge. So I guess where I'm going with this, when you look at the discussion of the short game over the last 3, 4, 5 months, is there anything that sticks out for you or maybe that has become more apparent for you or maybe even learned that has come from this discussion? Would you, you know, highlight any 2 or 3 points to kind of finish our pod here through this discussion, as Victor Hovland has been kind of the poster child of this?
I think this is the same kind of, in essence, crux that we have oftentimes with golf instruction. Like, we always got to be careful to confuse like some sort of correlation with a causation type of thing. And I think, you know, I think Joe Mayo has clearly done an awesome job with Victor. And I think, you know, Joe does a great job of when something in the golf industry is kind of like, you know, oh, it's got to be this. He's really good at just like poking the bear and being like, yeah, I don't know about that. Right. Which I have a, you know, tremendous like appreciation, respect for Joe. I think, you know, and that can go both sides, like, right. So to me, it's like, you know, I think the conversation of steep to shallow, it brings up a lot of really interesting things to like unpack. One of them is, okay, well, how are we measuring it? You know, we're using a radar device or some sort of like, you know, ball flight monitor, to tell us what the impact is, you know, X degrees down. And, but then it's like, well, where is that? Is that at first touch of the ground? Is that at the ball? Could those things be different? So, you know, that's an interesting thing. I've had a great relationship with the guys over at Ping for a long time, and they have a focal system, which is a high speed 3D camera system. And, you know, we're looking at short game stuff. I had this hypothesis many years ago that there's a shot where people are hitting the ground first and the club's bouncing off the ground and back up into the ball. And you can actually see angles of attack that are possibly even up with a wedge. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing that. We're seeing that the angle of attack at first strike of the ball is oftentimes different than the angle of attack when the club first hits the ground, and they can be at different times, depending on the shot, et cetera. So there's all that stuff of like, what is it that we're exactly measuring? Then there's sort of like some really devil's in the detail type stuff of, you know, so I'm going to take one step backwards. So with the angle of attack stuff, I mean, there's clearly guys on a take a measuring device. Let's call it like TrackMan or whatever. That have on the shallower side of the angle of attack. Again, mm-hmm. we'll call it like 5 degrees down, mm-hmm. you know, like a Matt Kuchar or plenty of people, Park McLaughlin, that have shallower angle of attacks. And I promise you, 99% of the people in the world would love to chip it like any of those guys. So we got to have like somewhat high level, big picture at all.
Jason Day, right? I mean,
yeah. He would. So, okay, so hold that for a second, because not taking a divot doesn't necessarily mean a shallow angle of attack.
Right.
Okay. Separate things, but right. I'm just talking about straight up measured, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get a guy like Victor who, and many others who have a steeper angle attack who also chip it really good. And then you have a guy like Victor who goes from shallow to steeper and chips it really good. But there's also like the co-variables that piggyback along with that potentially. Was it just the angle attack that changed that made it, or were there other things that piggybacked with it? Because mm-hmm. again, a guy like Kuchar had a shallower angle attack and chipped it fine. So in and of yeah. itself, it's not that. So to me, it's like in and of itself, I don't think the answer is going to be an angle attack. Now there's other aspects of it. What is the overall shape of the swing you're creating? You know, something that maybe could be measured through like vertical swing plane, right? Mm-hmm. What is the overall trajectory of the plane that the club head? This is not the whole shaft. Mm-hmm. It's just the club head. What is that? What is the trajectory that that's moving on? And what is the plane that's created on? And how does that affect things like how much dirt gets into the way between the club head and the ball, mm-hmm. the possibility of the club digging. You have the radius of curvature of the club head. So mm-hmm. it's like almost like the circle or, you know, the how sort of wide or narrow that circle is that you're creating within that swing plane you're swinging it on. Things like that matter. What is the low point of the arc? Like how below the ground is it? This is where you could mm-hmm. have someone potentially with a pretty like steep angle of attack take no divot. So there's all these things that are the like in the nuance of all this that I think will go into what makes someone's chipping motion, you know, really great or not really great. And I think you're going to see different angles of attack within that that are going to be effective. I don't think the answer is going to be an angle of attack. I think the angle of attack was a great impetus to get the conversation going. But it, you know, my prediction will be like the real understanding of what makes someone's chipping motion great or not great will probably lie more on, you know, vertical swing plane, radius of curvature, the depth of the circle that you're creating the depth of the low point. And then also we got to have a better understanding of what is it that we're exactly measuring again, because, yeah. you know, is it measuring first contact with the ground? Is there some sort of ricochet off the ground into the ball? And how does that affect the measurement? Things like that. So, you know, I think these things trigger like a really important conversation to where we have a deeper understanding of it all. And also I think there's a little bit of having the patience to be like, you know, we got to see how this shakes out a little bit with like more and more data and the interpretation of it and careful not to be like, it's got to be this. Because as soon as you do that, you oftentimes constrain yourself to your own flexibility when it comes to executing a plan to help someone get better. And I think that's always a dangerous pitfall to put yourself, a dangerous position to put yourself in.
Well said, man. That was there's a lot there. It's good. It is a deep thinker, right? There's more to unpack there. I think you're right. There's more to unpack with all that. And then just the journey that that particular student is on in learning how to hit pitch shots.
Like you're saying with like a Jason Day, like how, like what are the risk conditions you're doing? Like what much more to get even. That's just like saying, what is the club head doing? Then there's like, how is your body making that club to do whatever it does. And that matters too. Sure. Right. And then it becomes like, okay, you know, you have this club moving through space and there's forces and torques, you know, creating that motion of the club. But then it's like, where's that coming from in terms of your hands? Like, what is your left hand doing relative to your right hand? And, you know, I mean, if you take someone who struggles chipping and you have them hit a right hand only shot, they oftentimes chip it better right away. Right. And then, but the problem is you put the left hand on and like, it's what happened. Why can't you just, and they can't just, you know, it doesn't transition that transfer over perfectly. That's all like really interesting stuff. And this is where, you know, you just keep unraveling the onion a bit.
I'll finish with this. Cause I've, you know, Parker is a friend of mine. We've talked about this a lot and I, you know, was, and Joe's brilliant and friends with him. And he's been very open with me about a lot of the stuff. I remember when he made the changes with Victor right out of the gate and I was texting with him and some of the stuff. And before like all this, you know, kind of, he really kind of kept poking the bear. And obviously, you know, Joe has a good following and, you know, it becomes a conversation. And then you guys' stuff and down there in Orlando. And so it's been a good one, you know, and it's been a fun one. And it's really kind of rattled, I think, some other that maybe might be on the other side of it as far as shallow and, you know, maybe getting the leading edge off the ground. I know for me, there's a lot of us, and I'll finish with this. You know, I go back to my high school, college days of playing and a lot of shaft lean, you know, hinging it pretty, you know, with a decent amount of extension in the lead wrist and, you know, hitting down on it. Weight, pretty heavy left and down in front, leading edge on the ground. And, you know, I don't know, maybe one every 10, lay the sod over. And, you know, and then that would be in my mind, right? And then, you know, what do I do? I not try to keep the leading edge off the ground. Now I got the thin involved. And so now I'm, you know, I got the fat and the thin going, with some good ones, you know, sprinkled in there as well. But that journey, and Parker's been on it, so many of us have been on that journey, right? And that education of, hey, let's get the leading edge a little more off the ground. Let's get a little shallower, right? Utilize the bounce. And all of a sudden, okay, now the club head's hitting the ground. It's not digging as much and, you know, provides a little bit of relief. And I, you know, I went through that. I was like, hey, that helped me. That helped me provide relief at the bottom and the fear of laying the sod over it. And there's a lot of players who've been through that. And I'm sure we've helped them to some degree do that, get to kind of, you know, decompress that leading edge maybe a little bit. And so to have the discussion of no leading edge back on it, let's get steeper. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, you're like razor blade. I'm going to get that leading edge on the ground. Understanding there's a way to do it, right? There's a way to, you know, hit that shot as well. So it's just been a fun conversation. To say the least, and to get your thoughts on it, it's pretty fascinating, really.
Yeah. And then like flip the other side of it, right? A guy like Victor, he's like, oh, when I'm shallow, I feel like either I'm going to hit it fat or I got to pull the handle forward and then I hit it fat. So it's like for him, shallow probably gives him the heebie-jeebies, right? No doubt. And then you go, well, okay, with the steep side, one out of every 10 shots was that. But then what if someone came along and was like, okay, yeah, but you were steep this way. But what if you were steep in a slightly different way where the vertical swing plane is, you know, this, and then your hand path through the ball is this because you're kind of like trying to like get steep and then come up out of it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I feel like I can hit the ground hard and spank it every time. And it never digs. Now all of a sudden you get like, you know, it's not 1 out of 10. It's like, I feel like I can never not hit, I'm never going to dig it. You know, when Phil hits his flop shot over people, he's in the ground really hard on those shots. Yep. And that's part of where he has no fear of killing someone is because he's like, I'm going to hit the ground and this club is going underneath the ball no matter what. It's not like, there's not like this like precision that he has to have. He's like hitting the ground. And the club is getting underneath the ball and the ball is going up every time. And that's why he's able to do it totally fearlessly. Yeah. So, you know, again, that goes back to you don't know what you don't know, right? Yeah. So it's like if you got to always sort of like say there's maybe some variables at play that we're not aware of. And that's why the experience of, oh, this and this and this making steep, I hit this shot. I don't like it. And then all of a sudden steep gets demonized. And it's like, well, maybe there's other variables in there that make a good version of steep versus a not a great version of steep. And then same thing can be said for shallow. So that's why anytime I see like a really great player display steep or display shallow, and they're able to build a career, you know, off a short game that has either one of those, it's like the answer's not in either of those being bad or good. It's going to be built into the nuance of what makes a good version of that and a bad version of that. And that to me is part of like the discovery of a coach trying to just, you know, have a deeper understanding of like what it is we're doing. And then hopefully with that deeper understanding, then when someone doesn't do that, you can help them get to that, that holy land easier than not. So.
Chris, you're the man. Thank you so much for joining us on the pod. Great discussion as always. Congrats again. You're always generous with your time. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you, buddy.
Awesome.
Thanks, man.